Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I interviewed Anthony Gordon, and he said moving away from Everton and Liverpool.
I watched that yesterday.
How good is that?
Moving away from Liverpool to get... Because, you know, he's got his mates were there, and that temptation of going out. He said it's just completely transformed his... I tell you what, he blew me away, by the way.
I know, he kept saying it right the way through it.
I couldn't believe it. But
I've never met anyone like you.
did you know he was like that?
No.
Yeah. Okay. From England interviews, you know...
Yeah. Like, oh no, I didn't know.
He like came what, across like, really you, well.
So basically,
Roy
Joseph. Yeah,
no, but you obviously were. But why are you so surprised by somebody can?
Roy, we'll show you a clip of it.
What, how do you prepare for a match then, in terms of bringing those thoughts together to make sure that you're in that tunnel, absolutely ready to go?
So my preparation for a match will start 2 days before. I have like fully set. I mean, 3 days will be set out to the minute.
I thought that was only me.
No, that is me as well. I try not to think too much about the game, but it's more so I do a lot of meditation, visualisation, a lot of goals.
Visualising what's going to happen in the game?
Yeah, so that if a chance comes, I feel like I've already lived it.
And in terms of what 2 days before you start visualising what the game is that your opponent as well, or is that just your particular game and what you're going to do?
No, it'll be my opponent.
Thinking about what they're going to
do. Because I usually know what he's going to do, what his habits will be. If I'm playing against a fullback who's running, it's more so getting myself comfortable with, actually, if he does a 1-2 around me, I'm going to put myself in that position of being tired and getting back now, so that in the game, it's a lot easier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
it doesn't look like it makes sense.
Tell your price, girl.
He's teaching you.
He is.
I mean, everyone thinks that football players turn up, it's quite instinctive, they're coached, they have to be instructed.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever think that there's that level of deep thought and preparation going into this level.
Yeah, some footballers can do that. I just can't. I prefer to be... My confidence comes from my preparation.
Yeah, I
get
that.
Yeah, I get it.
But it's not the first player to say or do that, is it?
No, but I think from a perception, you usually think young winger.
Maybe, yeah.
Young winger.
Liverpool.
That's what you want to say.
He said that. Listen, I'm not used to people from Liverpool that are intelligent. Welcome to Stick to Football, brought to you by Skybet. And this week we're going to talk about Manchester United, Nottingham Forest and all the controversy over the weekend. Who's the new Liverpool manager and who is the greatest English player to ever play abroad? I would switch on Thursday night for a game and everything from that moment to the end of the match was a routine for me. It was like repeat, repeat.
What, throughout your career?
Throughout my whole career. Thursday night, think about my opponent, think about what I'm going to do, think about who I'm playing against. I would always start Thursday night and be eating, my preparation, you know, that type of thing. Friday morning, from the moment I get up, the eating times, sprinting off the pitch, doing my little, almost, I would literally be almost like a routine. And it reminded me a little bit of, that's
how he was a little bit. Now, I didn't meditate or visualise. I just started thinking about the game. But let's go around.
I think that's visualising, though.
It is a little bit.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It doesn't have that name on it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think we put labels on things now, like meditate or visualisation or something. But I would almost play the, not the whole game, but you're playing against, you know, how do I want to start the game? You know, things like that, I would think about like that. But I do think the preparation thing is that it gives you confidence going into the game.
That was great.
And not, it's an easy one when you play Saturday and you play the next Saturday because your preparation's like you've got all week to almost get ready. But I used to think when we'd play, say, 3 games in 6 days, you might play Sunday, Champions League midweek, and then you play Saturday, and you'd be worried about yourself physically a little bit. You'd be thinking, oh, I don't feel right. But if I knew I'd slept, ate well, massage, ice, whatever it was I needed to do, I knew if I'd done all them, I almost felt like, well, I can't have done any more. So when I was about to go out in the tunnel, if I didn't feel 100%, it was like, I didn't worry about it because I was thinking I couldn't have done anything else. It made me feel that I was as ready as I possibly could have been. So I do think that preparation helps you so much mentally.
It's a routine, isn't it? Sports person's routine, is that what it is?
What was yours, Roy? Let's go around the table.
I think when I was younger, when I was a forest, was I thinking about football?
Was it instinctive?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have been in my digs or in my house on a Thursday night at Forest. I'm trying to remember this now. And really focusing on the game. I don't know, when I was a bit younger, I think it was a case of just turning up. I think then as you got a bit older, and the game was changing and sports science, and particularly when I went to United, expectations were a bit more maybe in terms of winning trophies. Maybe then I got a bit more intense and a bit more professional. And again, that you find out what suits you and works for you, that routine. Mm. Because there's other times where you do all that stuff and you think you've ticked all the boxes and you still turn up on a Saturday and have a bad game and you're like, am I overthinking it now? Is it... Routine can be dangerous as well if you're doing.
Did you think about your opponent directly in terms of who you're playing against?
Yeah, I think I would. Subconsciously, I'd be thinking who I'm up against. The players, obviously, midfield, you know, the lads you're going to be going to battle with. So I think subconsciously I would be thinking about it, but not going to bed at night time going, you know, I'm going to plan this. I just almost being just aware who I'm up against.
Friday night.
More so on a Friday, I'd say. I don't know. I don't think I'd be doing that. I don't think on a Thursday.
Were you obsessed with who you're playing against?
I think that when you're a fullback, it's the position on the pitch where you are most on a one-on-one duel. I think as a centre back, you can be covered. You've got players in front of you. Whereas a fullback, you can get isolated one-on-one, and you're up against a man. That man is basically going to be running at you and against. So I would think.
But not every winger would be like that, Gary.
No. I mean, I could play against Marcus Gayle.
Who would worry you the most? The lads you would just want to run at you. Would that be a bigger worry, or the guys who go in pockets?
The worry is always the player that will run in behind you.
Right. You're right, Dave. The pocket. Fullback,
let's say I was playing against Del Piero for Juventus or Fran for Deportivo La Coruña, and they play in that pocket. Yeah. It was hurting me and hurting us. It was hurting you because he was in behind you. But do you know something? It wasn't hurting me from a visual perspective. Right. It was hurting
all
from
in front of you.
A tactical perspective. Yeah. But if you've got like a player that made that run in there inside you, like a...
Overmars
or someone like that, that's where you were like, that would always be the concern. And that's where you'd start to think about your position and start to think about how you're going to deal with him. I'd actually start to think about, with Overmars, what needs to happen in front of me to make it a more comfortable game for me as well. So what does, say, Bex need to do, or what do you need to get closer to?
Experience, communication with the other lads around.
Nail Petit, because Petit can drop it in over my head. Yeah. Or if Bergkamp got on the ball and turned.
Yeah. Zola was a nuisance, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Zola was a pain. I'm telling
you. In them little pockets. But pockets hurt you, but they never embarrass you. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
You can always recover from a pocket.
Right.
You can't recover in there. You're done. If his player's got him behind you and he's quick, but a pocket, you can always get to someone.
Yeah, but that's what you're saying, though, is that that's killing the team.
He's killing the team.
And you're not as embarrassed by killing the team.
No.
You're looking after
yourself, basically.
Basically,
I'm the fullback here and the pocket's there. If you go into that pocket too early with Del Piero as an example, that left back or that forward spun in the channel and you're dead anyway. So you sometimes, it's that balance of when to go in.
Take the gamble, let him get on it.
Yeah, it's like, what's the worst thing to happen here? The worst thing to happen is me going probably, him not get the ball, but it goes in behind us and we're dead. We're all running back.
Yes.
So did you get Beckham round on a Thursday night? doing these visualisation sessions together.
You done that all right. Yeah.
So, righty, on to you now.
Well, you know, the thing is that I was always... They always said about training. As a striker, I thought training well and making sure that you're doing all that hitting the target and feeling good about not missing the target in training. I didn't get into... It's like Friday night, you start thinking about, especially someone like Des Walker, United and Pally and Bruce and what you're going to do. I only started thinking about that on a Friday, but the main thing with me, what I was always ready for, was making sure that I was hitting the target in training. Because then when I'm out, I know that the habits I've had there, I'm going to take them in the game. I'd never messed around in training, so that's what I based it all on. If I didn't have a good time in training, like on a Monday, I'd make sure I get it right on Tuesday, or if we're in on Wednesday, I'd make sure I get it right so I've got something to fall back on with some good finishes, some good plays, some good touches.
When we're watching teams get warmed up and they're shooting and they're not doing the proper, you go mad, don't
I hate that. Yeah. I hate that.
I would.
One of the things I hate...
Why would you mess around?
Yeah. Not mess around, but not really clinical in the
warm-up.
We're
talking about, you're on the game, you're now warming up, there's people coming in and there's a goal there for you to finish with and people watching and you see some of the lads, they're just like having shots.
That's the
time when it should be like right in on it, I'm ready to go, should not be missing a target. This is why you watch someone like Harry Kane, bro, in that moment. He is he's finishing as if it's in the game, and that is what I made sure I'd done in training as if it was in the game.
Well, there's some centre-halves you were up against, right, as well. Would you be going, I'm in here all... Yeah. Is there a lad you just rubbed your hands with?
Yeah. Especially when Dennis came.
Yeah.
And then you start to understand, the movement and the movement you could do. I didn't fear any of them. But, like, you know that there's some people you're going to have a tougher time against.
Yeah. Did you think about what you were going to do before a game?
In respect of what finish?
No, sometimes I used to play with people and it was just... David Thompson used to play with him. He's a bit mad, he's my mate. Yeah. But he'd say, like, tomorrow I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And I'm thinking, how do you know what the opposition
player,
you're going to do?
Yeah.
But it was that thing of, like, I'm going to do this tomorrow. I'm going to, like,
you know, the only
pass
thing you could
or I'm going to do that. But, as a striker,
I'd be thinking about what I'm doing after the game.
I think as a striker, you're thinking about, like, making sure that the touch is right. I'm always thinking, first, if I get the ball anywhere in and around the 18-yard box and he's not close enough, I'm turning, I'm shooting.
Yeah.
I want to get two free shots in the first half, hopefully in the second half as well, because I want them to know, first thing I'm going to do, the first run, I'm going there. I don't want it to feet when we start the game. I want them to know I'm going there or I'm going there, so they know that. So then the space opens. And if I get it, then I'll turn and I'll run at you as well. Or Dennis will get the space. And then
did you love scoring in training?
Absolutely. It was so tough. I'd say that all the time. It was so hard to score in training against Tony and Boldy, Dicko, Nigel and...
Martin, to be fair, he would hate conceding in training.
So it was tough. So you know that on the Saturday, this is why you look at some of the centre-halves and you think, there's no way he's going to be able to mark me today because, like, what I've had to do in training all week, they're not going to be able to
Because yesterday I watched the Anthony Gordon one and I watched the one you did with Trent. And I was just thinking then about me going into a game. And if I was at centre-back, different to full-back, you're up against one man. Centre-back, I'd just be thinking, the only thing I'd be thinking is it's my job to keep the team together, you know, push up, drop off. And I wouldn't be really bothered who I was playing against because I think, well, if I do that, you haven't really got much space. But you'd have no thought about, like, on the ball. It'd be like, OK, if we can play, we'll play. But when you were talking about Trent now and weight teams build up from the back. Yeah. So even if you're a defender now, it's not going in against, right, who am I playing against? How am I going to stop him? Or is he running the channels? Is he holding the ball up? It's more about, like, when we get the ball, I've got to start this. Yeah. You know, like, thinking now...
Do you think you would have been able to do it, truthfully? Would you think you... Obviously, you did adapt and you'd learn...
I think you'd adapt, but obviously there's better people... You know when people compare, say, Van Dijk to, say, Rio or John Terry? Mm. And we'll say... Van Dijk has to do this, Van Dijk has to do that, now the game's moved on. But I always think the great players at Venier, not all of them, but I think most of them would have been able to adapt, would have been able to do it. You know, because you get an I just think you're trying to tell me Rio Ferdinand or John Terry, who was unbelievable on the ball, couldn't take the ball.
Yeah. But taking it off the goalkeeper, Jim, you know, from a yard away from the goal, the other bits I'd be going, that's the bit I find strange when I see the centre-halves getting on a yard from the goalkeeper. I understand playing out. Yeah.
When they're doing that pass from the goalkeeper to the left.
Back and then they go, what's the point? And eventually they go along anyway.
The thing I think about it, though, is, and people always say, oh, could you do it? But I think when we were playing, we'd get nervous because we know we'd be in trouble if there was a mistake. Mm. Whereas now, because I think the manager gives you, not freedom's the wrong word, but it's almost like you have to play like this. Yeah. Now, we know now and again it's going to go wrong. And I think even supporters now in stadiums, remember when we were playing, if there was a ball anywhere around your box and someone made a pass, the whole crowd would be like, wow! Oh. Yeah. Now I think crowds watching it understand that, like, the goalkeeper's going to get involved. This, you know, it's not the same.
I can't understand the one where the goalie's in the middle of the six-yard box, you've got the two centre-halves, and he passes it to him.
Yeah.
I can't understand. I can't understand.
There's a couple of goals gone in recently.
Well, what's happening now?
What's
happening?
Back to the basics of football.
Is the centre-back's actually playing it to the goalkeeper now? So that one is that... obviously, you've nearly got done with it in the Champions... Just a bit of a mix-up, but even just the smallest detail. Now, a manager doesn't want the goalkeeper to give it to the centre-back because the other team can go, OK, they're going to the left and we're going to block them in. Whereas now they want it to go to the goalkeeper so we can go both ways. So the opposition can't...
That's really meticulous.
But we go back to the,
it is, isn't it?
But we go back to the idea of defending and back passes to the goalkeeper. But, Gary, you gave a goal away. It was against England. But we go back to... Who was it last week? Burnley gave a goal away and they were saying, oh, that happened. But when you were younger, you were passing back to the goalkeeper. You'd always say, but pass it to the side of the goal.
Yeah.
There's been loads of goals now where the keeper's missed, has gone in, you go, people go, oh, we don't mind that, you know, we have to take the risks. No, that's stupidity. Go
that's
back to
like
the goalkeeper.
Basic,
but go back
though,
where you're not in the middle of your goals, because if he does miss it,
he's going to miss the goal.
It's a corner kick, or you might have to run back.
When I was at City, when you speak about visualisation, the patterns of play were so kind of imprinted in us, really. So, like, I did used to think if Steph's stepping out with the ball, I'm going to be checking off this way, wingers then going to take the pocket. Like, our patterns were so set. If I went into Kira, I was then going to check off the other way. So I think visualisation did change over the years. But going into a game, I think... When you say about thinking about what you were going to do, it's difficult because you don't know about the opposition. But if I ever thought, oh, I'm going to take on 10 people and put a top corner, I knew it was something I couldn't do. So I would just visualise it going in, smashing someone. Like, I would think... No, but I would think of three things I could bring to the game.
I would first tackle.
And when I get it, when I get it, then a simple pass. Because if I knew I'll bring them things to the game, then I got my confidence from that. But it was weird because when I retired, when you speak about routine... Mm. I probably didn't realise how obsessed I was until I retired. So as soon as it hit 10 o'clock, even if I was in the middle of the best Netflix documentary ever, I was like, I've got to go to bed.
Wow.
And now I stay up till 11 and have two cups of tea. So
rock and 10 roll. O'clock just the night before a game, obviously.
No, just all through the week. And if I had a bad game, Jesus. I'd go back and go, oh, shouldn't have gone out for Nando's on Tuesday. I was constantly trying to like get the best form.
Is that going too far down the other way? But like
Roy,
questioning a Nando's.
I couldn't like have something like that in my head.
Yeah.
I'd had a Nando's like
on a Tuesday before.
Honestly, if I had that going into my head into a tunnel on a Saturday, they'd be like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I ain't got no problem.
Not like a Nando's on a Tuesday, I'm talking about.
So about Chinese after a game, you've played a game, you've won.
Fine, but if you
then go into sort of like a Tuesday, Wednesday, you're eating sort of like a takeaway. A takeaway.
And rice? Some
no, I've not you know prepared what, I've, my best
these,
that week.
With these, habits...
I put a doubt in my mind. I've put, like, a little bit of a...
But just think about the bad games you've had. I'm serious. Well, you've done all that preparation.
And it's still bad.
Yeah, that's...
The longer you go with all these habits, the more you've got to think back on, I didn't do that on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I didn't do this. No.
Yeah, I feel like it helped.
Depends who you are, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. I could see you being that guy. Yeah. I could see you
that's
being
why
that guy.
That's why I will die first.
Come on.
Surely I used to think sometimes when you go into games, most players are never 100% fit. There's always something going on, isn't it? But sometimes you are carrying an injury. That is much worse than eating a Nando's or going
to
the How would you mentally get it? I go into games sometimes, and I know I'm not right here, but you'd have to be strong enough mentally to think I can, with my experience, I can manage myself.
I was pretty strong mentally, but my
point. Be worried about the Nando's on Tuesday.
No, but it was just doing the right things. I think if you ever did the opposite,
I don't mind the charge of the fry, but this is Tuesday.
If you ever done, I think it was me that said it, and you're getting the blame.
You started here.
No, but if you ever done the opposite, where like maybe you did have a night out on the like which you shouldn't have, and you think I've got to have the best game of my life today.
Every week.
I love Jabe. I just saw your brain working, going, but Nando's on a Tuesday. If you're injured, surely you're going to be more worried about that.
But Righty, the point is, I honestly would say this without, I didn't take a chance.
Yeah.
I couldn't take it. I didn't feel like
I could
take a chance.
You know what, Gav? I remember it when we was at England, how intense you were.
Honestly.
To the point where hi, Gary, how you doing? And when you go, Jesus, fuck.
When you think of some of the stuff I used to
do. Wow, that's heavy.
People obviously, I was a good pro. Some of my stuff was absolutely disgraceful. You know, if I had no midweek game, you played Saturday to Saturday, Definitely be out Saturday. Definitely go out Sunday.
Wednesday?
Would you?
Monday and Tuesday. No, I'd draw the line on Wednesday, to be fair.
What, you'd be out for 4 days?
I would certainly, many times I'd go out Saturday after a game, go out Sunday, Monday and Tuesday.
Oh, and what were you drinking?
Anything.
Everything.
No, what, pints or whatever it was I was drinking at the time. And then you get ready for Wednesday and you come Saturday, you go, well, I better
do
be
Do you know the reason you got away with that, Roy?
And I was a bit younger, obviously. I was in a good team.
But the reason you got away with it is because a lot of the players in the other teams are doing exactly the same.
Probably.
So I always look at that period, pre-95, 96, as when all players were doing the same thing. So actually, if players were drinking 10 pints, as long as we're all drinking 10 pints, they're all in the same fitness level. I think 96 to 2000, where I think we professionalised a lot in that period, where nutritionists came in, we had a lot.
Foreign players definitely educated.
Yeah, and we had a lot of foreign players come in. I think that's where our, just general fitness levels, we weren't drinking as much.
Yeah. We had
the stories. I still carried on for a while.
You know, the old Liverpool team.
They're not changing me.
And they won everything. And everyone would tell you the stories that they'd go out on a Thursday night and they'd do this. And we'd be, Ulier'd come in and he's starting to make him more professional. And you get the older players like playing in the 70s and 80s going, but we did this and we did that. And you're a bit like, what you've just said there. But everyone else was doing it. Yeah. Your stories are just coming out because you won.
Yeah.
If Man United had won, Brian Robson would have been on the air and stuff
Anthony
like Gould, that.
This is why I've seen Anthony Gould. He's doing something else to take him to where he wants. Yeah. This is what I like about it because he's recognised, even when he said he had to go to Newcastle, it was as soon as it came up, I'm going. Because he's trying to go to the next level and the way he's preparing himself to go there. Yeah. I love it. It's just good
but
to see.
I love about it, that when I was listening to it, because I'm thinking that he's a young lad from Liverpool, to get into sort of visualisation and meditation, it feels a bit like, ooh. And to admit it and think, I might get some stick off his mates or something, or maybe other footballers think, what's he doing? But that thing of like, I don't care, I don't give a fuck.
He's so comfortable just talking about it.
You know, he's got the bed at like 7:30.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I used to do sort of like join the planes on the European Games. Sometimes I'd stand up and start doing stretches in the corridor of the plane, so that you didn't sit for 2 hours and like. Honestly, I would literally stretch in the middle of a play. I would literally not take any chance. But going back to him, when you think about young players, what he had to. We know Liverpool is probably one of the most passionate cities in this country by a million miles, and if you're one of your own there. To actually say you're going to leave and jump out of that city and say, I'm just following my ambition, that takes a lot. That would have took a lot.
Yeah, but look at Everton and look where Everton are going. He's made the right decision and he's seen it. Yeah. He's on that road, isn't he?
I asked him, I said, to be honest with you, Andy, I couldn't work out when Chelsea bid 40-odd million for you and I was watching you at Everton and then Newcastle bid 40-odd million for you. I was like, what would... you weren't quite at that level of player.
Yeah, but he's not that smart. He's gone to a club that's won nothing in 50 years, lads.
No, I'm just saying, but he's to leave, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but he's going there to try and help them to do something. He's the kind of player that can help them do that. Yeah.
He has had a good season, though, hasn't he? It's been a good move.
The way he's preparing, what he's trying to do...
You can keep saying
Newcastle ain't the last stop for him.
Right, we're doing Nottingham Forest.
Oh, I'm sick of hearing about Nottingham Forest.
Two of you over there, keep us out of it.
I got a tweet yesterday.
You were off Twitter.
No, I read it. I'm not tweeting, but I read the news. And this thing came up on my For You page.
Yes.
I'm just asking whether you're at the Nottingham Forest and Manchester City game on Sunday. I'm asking for 27,000 friends. I rang Sky up and said, I need the North London Derby Sunday. No, I'm at the North London Derby, by the way. Are you at Forest on Sunday?
No, I'm at that...
You're at the Salford game, aren't you?
Obviously, you...
Saturday.
We'll come on to United in a minute, because you were at United in the Cup Final. You're doing United's Coventry Cup semi-final. We've not heard your opinions on Nottingham Forest at the weekend.
The decision, you mean? The statement?
Well, not just generally. The overall thing,
messy,
really.
Yeah. Forest at the moment, going back over the last few months with the ownership, I don't think they're showing any class. That's the way I'd look at it. I just think the way they're carrying on, they were on the pitch. Who was that against? Was that against Liverpool? They're all on the pitch. The statement's coming out. You look at the ownership. Obviously, I was lucky to play for Forest, brilliant club when I was there, but I just don't like the kind of behaviour at the moment, what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're entitled to come out and defend themselves and obviously fight their own corner, of course. But just looking at over the last few years, I don't like what I see, really, with the behaviour of what's going on. At ownership level.
And the accusations, what they're saying about the contextual kind of like the the decisions and who supports who and that, where's it going? You know what I mean? I don't. You know what? I think that when we really sit here, I have to say for myself that I'm probably a part of it in respect to the pundits and how we've spoken about like referees and decisions and everything what's going on in that respect and where it's going. Yeah, part of the way that the pressure, like, because remember, it's come from these, for me, three, probably Stonewall penalties, I think.
Well, I don't know. No.
With Ashley, what I watched with Ashley.
I thought two penalties.
Definitely two.
I didn't think the handball one was me. No.
I only thought the last arm was
in a place where you probably want that. You probably want that. But for them to not even go, they didn't even go to VAR.
Can I tell you something? Do you remember Forrest a few years ago? Forrest played Huddersfield in the playoff final. And I remember, I think Huddersfield could have had...
Here we go.
Oh, is this what we got? Oh, yeah. Brilliant, Gary.
Oh, yeah. Oh, even this brief.
This is Steve Cook thanking John Moss for getting him up.
Exactly.
And VAR.
He had two.
And what?
Huddersfield could have had two penalties.
VAR, we love you. The Nottingham Forest 2 years ago against the Premier League.
There's always a tweet.
No, were they complaining after that match? No, I'm saying the decisions have gone against them. On Sunday, certainly could have had a couple of penalties, of course.
And they've
But they've had decisions, as we all know. We all discuss football. But why some go for you, some against.
Why go on social media, do you know what I mean? And I'm thinking, do they actually think there's a Newton fan going like...
That's from the owner. The owner's guaranteed.
In this moment, this is going to benefit Luton. Let's not give the... Like, do they actually think
the owner actually... I've obviously delved a little bit because we were involved speaking about it, but the owner wanted to put the tweet out at half-time. And that
he's out of control.
That was even before the worst penalty had happened in the second half. Because you could argue that, I mean, I thought the handball one was a penalty. I thought the other one was 50-50. But he wanted to put the tweet out at half time. And the media, I think people at Forest, even though it was the owners, were like, we can't do that. Because you realise how quickly it came out after the game. Yeah.
But you can't be surprised what the owner does at Forest.
No, we were doing Sky. The game, we'd done the first game, it just finished. And when Dave Jones was talking, maybe we were on a break or something, or he was talking, there was pictures on the screen. I just looked at my phone, I saw it, and straight away I just put it straight in Dave's face as if like, wow, I mean, like, we've got to cover this straight away. You've got to look at it. It just, the Luton bit was just like, I was thinking, oh my God, yeah. I can get the other bit because, you know, clubs have done that and managers have said that. But when I saw the Luton Beretta sort of almost go, is that really Nottingham Forest's proper Twitter?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because now people can have ticks.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I had to like...
Well, you can buy your tick, can't you?
Yeah, well...
in respect of the of VAR now, I was very much VAR because I thought that it was going to come, it was going to improve the game. Because obviously we now, because... Back in the day when the mistakes were made, we wanted it to be perfect. The VAR's going to come and it's going to get these things right. But then you look at it now and you look at everything what's happened with VAR. VAR has actually done nothing.
Yeah.
I think the mistakes that we would see with a referee, his assistants, now you look back at it, none of them, in all the time I remember football, have made decisions and poor decisions to the level of what we're seeing with VAR. I know that people say it's not the plea, it's not the people, it's not VAR, it's the people. But the people who are using VAR, for me...
But you know, like a few months with decisions, if you're the referees not involved in these games and you have a tough decision to make against Forest, I think it's human nature and law of average, the way they keep criticising officials or whatever.
You go against them.
I remember we had a referee come to United years ago.
Yeah.
And he gave us a chat about how he works. And I remember he said to me, he said, if you keep him a goal major during the game and I've got to make a decision. Yes.
Graham Paul.
Exactly. And he says, I've got to make a decision. He was looking at me and went, if you're giving me a stick and I have a decision to make against you, he went, I will go against you. That's human nature if you keep getting on my back. Mm. So I think Forrest had this idea all of a sudden, the referees are going to be, do you know what, let's have a bit of sympathy towards Forrest. Or I think it's just going to go against him. But they keep coming up with these statements and barging on the pitch. And not you fight your corner, but not when coaching staff and owners are coming on the
pitch. Yeah, but it's VAR making people feel
But that's another kind of conversation. I get that, the VAR stuff. But in terms of Forrest's attitude towards the world is against us and all this, you know, steady on it.
But I think coming back to it, there's a couple of things. One, you know, I've thought about a lot since Sunday, and, you know, Roy, you mentioned the word class. You've got Clattenburg almost like a Navy SEAL in the director's box, sort of like, you know, bear crawling along trying to get to the CEO. And then
he's your friend in the World Cup. He's your mate.
Was he the one he shook his arm?
What I'm saying to you, I've never asked anyone to resign in their lives, but apart from Boris Johnson. the reason that I asked him to resign was because...
If you saw for
Ed Woodward.
Do
you saw from managers.
On a weekly basis.
The reason asked him to resign was because if he actually saw that Luton tweet, that tweet that went out, he actually has got to distance himself for it, or he's got to be part of it. Yeah. If he's part of that, he's part of that. I'm like, wow. The second thing for me is football, right? So let's think about football. If you're a leader of a football club, and you talk about the leader of that football club, since Mark Clattenburg's come in the last 10 games, they've won one match. Before, the 10 games before, they won four, right? This is in all comps. They are now, you never give football players or employees in any business a get out or an excuse, ever. He's given them an excuse to not win. Yeah. And now that might sound really crazy, but when you put that negativity drain in, where you've got your managers, your players. Now Nico Williams is probably a really good lad coming out on Sunday. He's now talking about, and he's going to get in trouble for it. He's talking about referees. The managers talk about referees. They're all consumed. The fans are talking about referees. And they've now given them all selves. Everyone's against us. It's not working for them, this strategy of the way in which it's going. What they need to do is switch their mentality completely and forget about referees. Get Clattenburg out of the director's box so the camera stops going on him and concentrate on football, because they're going to go down based upon this if they're not careful.
Well, my line was, it was like a fan in the pub. And what you've just described there, that is every fan on social media with every team. Yeah. Every team is convinced the Premier League or the referees are against them. It's either the big six or the big teams think, or they've got it in for us, or we've got a referee who's from... I'm bored of it. Listen, reading it on social media, it's like, you're like, oh, when the referees come out on these type of things. So a club can't ever get to a stage where they're like a fan channel.
Yeah.
You can never get
But on a serious note, if it was a Luton fan, and actually the producer from Sky said this to me, he said, if it was a Luton fan in VAR and he was actually trying to help Luton, he'd probably want a draw, wouldn't he?
When I say the referee, when there's stuff come out the last few days going, well, a referee who supports a team is never going to be obviously in charge of their game. Yeah. But it doesn't mean to say then they couldn't influence a team. Exactly. You said he's a Newcastle guy, isn't he? You telling me he's never refereed a Sunderland game or and could have gone against?
So where does it go then? If we started to go into that,
what was the best result for Luton on Saturday, on Sunday? It would have been a draw between Notts Forest and Everton, so that they both stay in trouble.
Maybe,
Everton have pulled a little bit clear, haven't they? You know?
Probably an Everton win.
Do you know what I mean? It's like,
but
if you're having that conversation, people are making decisions on the back. I just don't get on.
You can't control it, because in the, I think it was in the Mail the other day, they give every referee in the Premier League and who he supported and who he couldn't referee. Yeah, right. So let's say that can't work, because
he's still doing other games.
Exactly. So say for instance you're a referee, you're a Man United fan, so you can't do United, you can't do City, maybe you can't do Liverpool. But then this season United are fighting with Tottenham and Villa for top four, or maybe Newcastle. So
that's the whole point.
Where does it get to where you say, well, oh no, this season they can't do that? Or it's just
if they're accusing them of that, so where are all these referees going to come from?
He's
your man. I knew Clattenburg. You were all over him at the World Cup, lads. Remember that?
Come on, he's all over him.
Right. So
come on, let's.
Gary was all over him.
He's opened up a can of worms there now.
You were pally.
I didn't know what happened, Gary. Right.
So he threw his mate under the bus.
What was the restaurant we were walking to?
I can't remember.
We used to go to it on the right hand side.
When you were free.
It was a burger, a lobster.
We had burger.
So basically, we're walking along this place in the World Cup. Three of us were having a chat, and Mark Clattenburg walks towards us.
But he was strutting, wasn't he?
He didn't even know it was him yet.
Right. I did. He's worked with us in the previous World Cup as our refereeing consultant. With the World Cup, we trained with him and stuff
got to know him a little bit.
So basically, we're walking along. Hi, Mark, how are you? Shakes his hand. And then he goes in and says, Mark, good to see you. And he just hangs back a few yards. And I'm like,
what's that?
And he goes over to Roy to shake his hand, and Roy goes,
did you?
No word of a lie.
Threw his fucking hand away. I'm locked with him.
And I'm like, what's going on here? I'm like, I know he's a bit feisty, but.
It was so funny.
So you carried on walking and we were left talking to him. I said, ref, is there a problem?
Ref, is there a problem?
don't book him.
I said something
in a book or something.
I said, right, what happened then? With us.
You know what's really
got all the grudge.
Did you actually?
You know what was really funny? You know what was really funny about it, James? Is that when we did finally catch him up, we said, what happened there? He says, I don't know. I think I remember him saying something.
I'm sure it's
you.
He's
you.
Threw his hand away.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, and I was right. Oh.
Do you not think since VAR, though, that's all we speak about after these big games? Like, Man United, Coventry, like, what a game the other day. And then the main talking point is, like, VAR. Mm. I hate it.
You know what's sad about that game as well? Is great. That's one of the FA Cup games.
Yeah.
A club that's got nothing to do with VAR. I don't know anything about VAR. They have literally done, in that comeback against United, at Wembley, one of the greatest things you'll ever see with the journey that Coventry have had from where they've been to where they are, and for that to happen like that,
just give them the goal.
Like people say, offside's
offside, right? But then we could talk about, but is he drawing the lines properly there? Have we got the right?
Here we go,
no, but the thing is, right? It's Jesus. Like, it's not definite, is it?
No.
For me, you know, people can get it. Why can't a referee just ref that game, and you know, if he gets it wrong, we say, you know what? He got that wrong.
Right. Well, Leeds, Middlesbrough the other day, there was couple.
The two things I don't think we can probably question with technology is probably goal line technology and actually offside.
I've got no problem
with
they're
goal actually
line.
The same every time, aren't they?
But even when we don't know, is that line right? You know, even the fact that we can say, well, he's drawing that line, is he right?
Do I think whoever's doing VR, I think he's a United fan. I think there's a connection there.
I don't want it now. Are you, it's gone that way.
He was nearly crying.
You're in the stadium, obviously, on Sunday. We were actually at Fulham, Liverpool, and seeing it come through. You started watching the semi-final of... I'm on commentary.
As soon as it went 3-1, I was watching. As soon as Liverpool scored the third, I went...
Peter Drury was
this.
Doing commentary on his own at the end. Honestly, I was literally like, what's going on? It was madness.
Normal weekend from then.
We was thinking, because we gave it the build-up and everything, we thought, if Coventry can hang in there, just stay in there, keep it tight, and then bam, United, bam, bam, bam. And we thought, this is over. And then Coventry scores a really good goal, what they scored, Ellis Sims. And then you're thinking, let's see what happened, And then bam, I get the difference.
Oh.
And then they get the third. It's like, this is what it's about.
Yeah.
This is exactly what it's about, because I just slowly watching Man United just slowly go further and further in their shell, hoping just hurry up and this game finish so as we could get on with it. Instead of someone getting hold of the game and manager, he took Kobe Mainoff, he took Garnacho.
You know the Peter Kay joke when he puts the rich tea in the hot cup of have you ever seen it? The biscuit one.
Where no.
I've seen it.
Is that what Man United were?
it's
really going to be a meme, isn't it?
I don't know when you're watching it and you're like they're 3-0 up and like kind of cruising, but when they started, you could just see players stop doing stuff. Just see them stop.
Like afterwards, we were critical. I know the managers come out and said, "Well, it's not embarrassing, but Coventry could have beat them before the game. Anything can happen, and they went and scored 3 goals at Wolves. But it was the fact they came back from 3-0 down.
3-0 down my, at Wembley
after 70 minutes.
Were you critical?
Down. Critical of.
To be honest,
if you're Man, you know you're 3-0 up in a cup semi-final against a Championship team. And teams can score goals, Coventry can score goals, but that's where you go, all right, that's...
Okay.
Well, right, I came away from Sunday, and obviously I'd not seen the game, just saw little bits at the end, but saw your sort of speech. I feel like you've got to a point now where there's nothing more, left to say on United. Yeah. It's almost like you're repeating,
Like even when they were 3-0 up, I was watching, I went, I hope United now show another side to them where you go, you win 4 or 5 and there's no nonsense after the game, and give the manager a bit of a breather.
Mm.
You're looking going... They didn't even have that side to them. When you're 3-0 up in a cup semi-final, and even if Coventry do get one back, you go, just relax. That can happen. Or even if they went to 3-2, but I tell you what, we'll show them our class. You were at the stage where we were 3-0 up anyway. And when you look at this United team recently, and I'm just going back over the last month or two in terms of the game, at Brentford, they gave up a late goal. Chelsea.
Bournemouth.
Bournemouth, late goal.
Champions League.
So this United team, you're looking at, and I'm looking, I'm going, I can't believe what I'm watching. Mm. I cannot believe a team which is in such control of against... Again, what did you say about Coventry? You respect every team that's on the pitch. Every team. I've never disrespected any team. But you're looking, but 3-0 up. It is game over. Mm. But somehow they find a way to cause...
I think the weirdest thing about it was, as I said, I didn't see the game, but
hanging in on the end.
It has happened a lot where United concede one and then concede another one like 2 minutes later. They fall apart. But we've all played in games where that's happened, where you just think, the thing I couldn't understand is you get to the end of the game and you think, all right, the game's stopped now. Right, the manager comes on. Lads, what's got? It's Coventry. It's 3-3. Okay, we've had a mad, crazy 20 minutes. Sort ourselves out. What's the problem? Boom, boom, boom. We've got half an hour now. And I'd expect United then to go on and score
United
a couple
hanging
of goals
on.
In extra time. Whereas Coventry then... Obviously, the VAR is tight, they hit the crossbar. That was the worrying bit, because mad stuff happens in games sometimes. We've been part of it. But the extra time, the way Coventry went on again and United didn't...
They were hanging in there, Jane, at the end. Yeah. And you have to be critical, because, as I said, you look at the team this season, particularly the games they've lost, out of goals they've given up, and late defeats in Europe as well, you're looking going, was Ten Hag manager of Ajax, wasn't it, when Spurs... Yeah, they were training up against Spurs, and with a half an hour to go, 25 minutes to go, and Spurs beat them... Sometimes it comes from a manager where you go, no, you fucking get a grip of players. They show sometimes managers talking to groups of players, but that's where you get a grip of fellas. You go, lads, what?
I could only imagine myself or the dressing rooms I've been in, and I think it would have been, fucking hell, lads.
That was like a loss.
I don't think it'd be like, well, it would have been, fucking
I was relieved. I mean, obviously, I was away from it. I was relieved at the end, because I just couldn't stop thinking about what it would have been like for the manager and the players if they'd lost the game. I know that would have been amazing for Coventry, and I get that, but I think that would have been one of the most horrific next 4 weeks you would have probably seen in terms of an annihilation of a manager and players, because I think it would have been toxic.
Would you ever recover from that? If you're a player manager,
I was relieved.
You're Man United, you're playing a champion, you're 3-0 up.
Yeah.
You'd never forgive yourself. Never. There's games we look back now and we go, listen, we're talking about bottle jobs or games we've lost, we think we should have won it. And these are the games that keep you awake at night. Yeah. So to be 3-0 up, you'd never...
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Forgive yourself.
Oh. It would have been a public annihilation for 4 weeks. The stadiums would have been, to be fair, pretty toxic. The criticism and scrutiny on the manager would have been horrific. It will be still big, but I was relieved.
I think he could have been hard after the game, because it's easy to be hard when you've won the game, if you play.
Yeah.
I think he could have came after a few of the players, not individual, but come and go. Like, when you get interviewed after the match, a manager can say, everyone's frightened to death for managers to say anything, but come on and go, that is unacceptable. The demands at Man United are, we need to do better than that. If we're 3-0 up, we see the game out.
Well,
if we do concede
Harry
a goal...
Harry Maguire said that, though. I must say, Harry Maguire, I think, in the game, was the one driving them forward. And I thought his post-match interview was very good.
He did
after. He was like, this is not good enough at Man United. And I thought, that's what they need. Like, more of that.
Yeah, what did we make of it? I mean, at his press conference, I felt like it was almost like a deja vu type moment, Groundhog Day, where you've seen managers over the last 8-10 years go in and... You know, obviously he's gone and attacked. He said that the media were embarrassing, the reaction was embarrassing. He's gone on.
But at least he's shown. Do you know the one thing I'd say about him? Because we asked him, but he reacted to Jamie a few weeks. But at least he's come out and at least shown a bit of fight.
Yeah.
No, obviously you go down that road, you're challenging the media and whoever who's been critical of United recently. I don't mind that. The man's entitled to an opinion. He's been asked a question. But at least I look at him and go, well, I hope your team end up fighting the way you're kind of at least fighting your corner. It might be too little, too late, but it's nice to see it because your team didn't show enough fight. When they were under the cosh towards the end, an extra time.
Yeah, but when you listen to him when he's talking about Man United, that's two now consecutive FA Cup finals. Like they're a cup team, but look, even if they were a cup team, they're not winning cups.
Yeah,
you know, Man United are not. You know, and I'm not. I don't want to dig them out, but Man United are more than just winning cups. A cup team.
That's so what they are on right
at the moment. Team, yeah, but then you're looking at the manager, and when you listen to that as his kind of like comeback, you feel like.
But right, I look at it and think which players have come to United over a 10-year period and improved from the moment they come in, and which managers that have come in haven't effectively been ruined when they've come in and end up in a situation like Erik ten Hag. Erik ten Hag was a great... If you think about what we all said about Erik ten Hag when he came in 2 years ago and how positive we were about the work that he'd done at Bayern, the work that he'd done at Ajax, and you end up 2 years later saying that... We've ruined managers at the club and we've ruined players. And I don't... You can say, OK, it's down to them individually. I get that. But there must be something that's hanging...
But I'm still looking for the manager when stuff is going wrong over the last month or two where they're giving up late... I still want to see something from a manager. You're on about coaching. Do I think he's a good coach? Absolutely. Does he do good coaching sessions? Of course he is. But sometimes you want from a manager is when United got 3-1 or 3-2 the other day, you look at your man... I want to see a bit of madness. Mm. I want to see a manager on the sideline getting a grip of people. When people are making statements or they're going on Twitter a few weeks, you can get a grip of fellas going, that is unacceptable. You don't have to, again, it's not necessarily about throwing fellas on the bus. So this idea of being a coach at these clubs, it's more than being a coach. Mm. The great coaches and managers are personalities.
I think they wouldn't
let that happen yesterday, Gary. Yeah. Put it this way, if we saw Man City doing that, we'd be like, okay. Or a national team doing that. But at United, we were kind of looking going, we can't believe what we're watching, but... This group is capable of doing that.
It's that thing, Roy. He's had the Ronaldo situation. He's had the Sancho situation. He's had obviously a couple of incidents with Rashford. I think he's genuinely in a position where he's tried the hard line with Sancho. It's probably not worked because the club lose out, the player loses out, and the manager loses out. With Ronaldo, probably they both decided it was going to end. Rashford, he's almost in some way sort of have a word with him, but not let him off.
Yeah.
He's probably in a position where he thinks, I'm not quite sure whether to actually stick a twist here.
Yeah.
He's probably what I mean?
I think they're the things I actually admire him on. I don't think he's got them wrong at all. Ronaldo had to be dealt with, and he dealt with it head on. Sancho, the club obviously looked after him for a couple of months for whatever was going on off the pitch. I think he made a very small comment.
I'm not saying he made mistakes, but he's probably got so many of these situations building up on him. He's probably thinking, I can't afford another fight. I can't afford another war, you know what I mean?
I know, but he dealt with the Ronaldo thing and he was right. He dealt with the Sancho thing. Let's be honest, did absolutely nothing for Manchester United. 70, 80 million, nothing. He dealt with that when he stepped out of line. Now you've got Rashford, whatever's going on there, brought him off again at the weekend. So I wouldn't worry him in terms of what he's done in terms of, you know, how he runs the squad or discipline, because when he was winning last season, I think there was a game at Wolves where Rashford, who was Man U's best player, he was just on the bench and everyone, why is he on the bench? And then it came out afterwards, he was late for the team meeting and everyone goes, tough management, great management, because he's winning.
And he scored.
If he does that now, because they're not doing well, they say...
Yeah, but he brought Rashford on at half-time when they were losing.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is he made a statement. He made a decision that we all applauded because he was doing well. So I'm always wary of being too positive on that or too critical, because it all just depends how he's getting results. The big worry for him as a manager is the same thing is happening from basically day one of this season till now. You're talking like 8 months of the same thing of like team being madly open, conceding shots, conceding goals in quick succession. It's a bit like, if you're talking about him being a top coach, and obviously his pedigree when he came in, Ajax, got to a Champions League semi-final. A top coach, that can't even happen for 8 weeks, never mind 8 months. You've got to fix that.
Yeah.
How easy you are to play against, and you get to a stage of a semi-final. That would be the biggest worry for me in terms of how he's setting the team up, and why is he not able to fix that?
I don't think it's the manager. I think it's something in the dressing room. I feel like when you speak about like recovery runs, work ethic, like that's what comes from running for your mate and everything else. And then you see Bruno, someone misses a chance, his hands are in the air. Like,
I think Bruno's frustrated.
You don't do that if you're Bruno's together.
A winner. Yeah, but Jill, Bruno's a winner. Whatever he's got his foot where you see him doing that. But I think
he's won nothing in his career.
He's
29 years of age. He's won nothing.
He's the kind of player that is trying. He's probably
what's he won in his career? What's he won in his career?
He's won very little. In respect of wanting to be a winner, his standards are high. And let's face it, take Bruno out of Man United right now. We're talking about players who have improved or haven't.
He's one of the ones, he's a talent.
If he's not doing what he's doing, Man United are nowhere near where they are. He's frustrated. He probably sees it in training every day. People not maybe up to the standard of what he's looking for. And it spills over on a Saturday because he brings it. Whatever we say about his histrionics and how he's acting on there, he brings it. If Man United are going to be saved in a game, it's probably him who's going to do it. Yes, he's got every right to be. He's got every right to be upset with them because they should be doing.
Yeah, but they're really good leaders. If he wants to be this leadership, and he, Is he a talented player? Absolutely. I think he's a brilliant player. No doubt about that. Talented boy. But does he help people out? Does he make the other players around him better? The answer is 100% no. He does like to dig him out, and that's fine. But you have to drag fellas along. We talk about making the point about players and when you're going into battle week in, week out. We used to say it years ago in the dressing before you go to Liverpool or Leeds when they were decent at the time, or at Arsenal, going, are you happy with the lads you're with? You'd sit around, you go, are you happy to be in the trenches? And they go, yeah, I think we've got a chance. Mm-hmm. Might be Nicky, Bob, Paul Lynch, whoever, Brian, whoever. Are you happy with? Yeah, we've got a chance today. No one guarantees you win the football matches, but would you like to be in that United dressing room today with these guys we're talking about going, yeah, I'm not sure about him, but I think he's okay when we're winning. But you're not going to be winning every time, or a team might come back and might have a momentum. How do you stop that? How do you flex your muscles? That's what I want from... We talk about players all the time, talented players, but it's about personality sometimes. Who's going to get you over the line in big games?
Bruno's got that.
Where's the evidence? Where's the evidence?
The way he plays, the way he saves this club, the way he saves
the club.
This team.
He's won nothing in his career.
Yeah, but he's won
Look
nothing
at
his
CV.
Career, but what he's trying to do, if you're going to pick out somebody out of Manchester United...
No, but if he's one of your best players, there's a responsibility,
yeah, but that's
Ridey.
Right, but then it's up to the other players to... OK, you might not like how he's acting, but then you... But the way he plays, by example... The examples he sets, the way he plays. Because he performs, he'll score that winning goal.
But there's more to it than that. There's more to the game than just what you're doing on the...
When you look at Man United and how they're playing now, the structure, wasn't it? The structure...
That's true enough. Right? Listen, I'm not putting all that on him.
This guy is he's literally winging it.
But when you're saying... I always look at the players first. Mm-hmm. Because I think managers get too much criticism, actually, you know, and think, or maybe too much praise the other way. But a manager, I think the great managers... When you had Ferguson, I look at Liverpool team now with Klopp. When you're saying the players aren't run... Now, I'm not giving them any excuse whatsoever. But my point is, when you've got a manager, he's dragging you on this journey. He's bringing you with you. He's making you sort of... You build this togetherness, this fight. You're having a tough time against Coventry. You get over the line. You win a 3-2 and go, fucking hell, lads. You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't look like he's got that personality, that charisma to sort of... He's bringing this group with them.
But I think, Cara, what's happened at United over 10 years is that the managers towards the end of the reigns look like they don't like the players and the players don't like the manager. It feels like there's not that sort of bond. And that's happened not just with Erik ten Hag, it's with all the managers for the last 10 years. You've always ended up at the end thinking, I'm not sure he likes them players out on the pitch.
But you look at a group of players, but do you? Do you warm towards them?
And vice versa.
Yeah, you look at a group of players. And again, listen, I get it. When you're watching matches, it's easy when you're sitting up having a cup of tea and making judgments on people. We've been there and we've done. It's fucking hard.
Yeah.
It's hard with the football matches, particularly to keep winning. And every now and again, this United team turns up. That's my biggest problem with this group of players. Are going, are you up for it? Or are you going to have a good 20 minutes left? The top players of the top club turn up week in, week out.
Yeah.
And that's what consists, that's what the great players are. We know what we're going to get. We look at this United group, and the other day, I'm looking, I'm going, they're 3-0, and and everyone's kind of going, oh, the game's over. And I was kind of glad. I want to see United now. Just get 4 or 5, get the striker score.
Yes.
You go,
yeah.
I tell you, Coventry had a bad day today. Yeah, 6 by United. And all of a sudden, it changed. You're going, oh, my God. What the fuck are we watching here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was like utter madness.
Have to beat that out.
But if you were a player, you'd be looking, going, lads, what's going on here? We're getting run ragged by Coventry. Coventry have lost 13 games in the Championship. Mm. Okay, they had a good result down at Wolves, but beating Wolves and beating Man United should be a different test for them. They bloody nearly done it.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, you might be going, there was no celebration. You're damn right, there's no celebration. You'd be cringing.
But I think, I don't know, I think if you miss a chance in a game, do you want your midfielder going, oh, or do you want, sometimes I see it with City, Foden will go up and go, well, next one. I just think them little things, there just seems to be something. Do you think they're a together group who are all on the same page knowing what they want to do?
No, I think it screams out
that they're not. Everyone's doing their own thing. Even in the interviews, it's like they're saying different things. And, yeah, I just think they need to get on the same page.
If you're a manager and you're an owner coming into United, is Bruno one of the players you're going to get rid of?
No, he's very talented. Yeah.
You can't get rid of everybody. Yeah, you have to hold on.
But then he's the kind of player that, with the right players around him, you probably think he's got the kind of attitude where he's probably trying. He's trying. Yeah.
But you know, you're on the attitude.
It's frustration. I can feel the frustration.
Is that true? Did he miss the first half of the match?
No, he got there for the start.
He was there at the start of the game.
Ooh.
Anyway, still got a good time in that marathon.
Anyway, talking about division.
He ran straight from
talking about divisions in dressing rooms. It's now time for Super Six.
Oh, we had a bad time. Just get on with it, Ben.
No,
yes.
Talking of shite. Gary, you got four.
What?
Four what?
4 points.
What do you mean?
Four what?
Four results. Right. I'm thinking four results. Right.
Don't worry, we're the same.
Is
we got back. We don't
win. Yeah.
I don't think we get any.
Hang on, let's wait and see.
No, I'm telling you.
But why
did
you lose? You're losing sleep.
You didn't get the results right.
Roy, we were bad as well.
You got seven.
What's wrong with you and your negative, like...
I'm strong?
Yeah, because you're so negative.
That's the Bruno stuff.
Sorry, Jill, keep me back.
I don't want to join them.
I feel like I'm being a... Yeah.
What's up?
Jill, you look very smart today.
What's up,
guys? Thank you.
Tell you what,
thanks.
Splashing out. That, your new shop must be making fortune.
Oh, whatever.
She looks amazing, Jill.
You haven't been.
Look at you, man.
The shop's good, you know. You need to come and see it.
I'm going to come Friday, Jill. You might not be there.
I'm not there.
Is Shelley there?
Yeah, she will be.
I'm with Brian.
Give you a free coffee.
We met for a coffee the other day again. I was the only one who turned up.
Oh, yeah, I was late.
Yeah. Oh, I just stayed for her, though, didn't you?
I know. Sorry. Yeah, I've never been sweating so much in all my life. I was like, the time was getting later.
And you had to pay as well.
I had to pay as well.
Jesus. No, you offered.
Why do everywhere I go, I have to pay for stuff? It's mad,
do you know what? We went for a coffee.
Does anyone pay for my stuff?
You know when I was in Qatar with you two, I was buying. I bought the food.
Did you?
Cool. Wouldn't you remember if you paid for that? I remembered.
Yeah, you did, to be fair.
Thank you very much.
You got us a coffee in a team with...
Only Manchester United, Burnley or West Ham. It's Burnley. Playing Burnley, yeah. They're obviously Burnley, yeah.
It was like
Super Six.
United beat Burnley.
Yeah, they beat Burnley.
No.
They'll beat Burnley.
3-1.
West Ham, that.
3-1?
Yeah, 3-1.
Like that.
Why are they first?
Oh, I don't even want to...
We're the winners.
I don't want to decide this one.
I need to go for my water.
Let's get a win at least.
There's a water under there, Gary.
Everybody's under getting shots against United. Everybody.
Under the bar.
Yeah, go with it, right?
You think 3-2?
Yeah, I'll forgive you for the Bruno.
3-2. No, it's okay,
I'm
man.
I'm not predicting this one.
Hey, it's okay. Hey, it's okay.
I'll never come between us. 3-2, man.
United?
3-2 United.
3-2 United.
Winning 3-0.
Right, Newcastle, Sheffield United.
Newcastle.
At all.
They're on a good run, Newcastle.
Yeah.
You love Tree.
And Anthony Gordon's...
Stephen Forrest.
Anthony Gordon's the man, so...
Anthony's just run me.
Is he impressive?
He's just visualised...
he's gone to Newcastle.
Yeah, ask him what score it's...
He's very good. I was impressed with him.
He won't end up at Newcastle.
Where were you, that beach? Where was that?
Whitley Bay.
Whitley
Bay. It was nice.
Oh, I spent a lot of time there when I was
4-0.
Bit cold, but...
Yeah. Right, going 4?
4.
Newcastle on.
At Newcastle.
I would have said 2, you said 3, and you said 4.
So let's go.
Let Jill go.
Go on, Jill.
Four.
Come on, Jill.
I was going to say in the middle, 2, then. But I feel like you used one.
No.
We'll go 3.
We'll go 4.
3 what? 3-0.
If
it's 4-0, yeah.
We'll go 4-0. We'll go 4-0.
I'm telling you, man, Newcastle can romp them.
You're like, use the side. If it's 4-0, I'm going to beat you.
Everton Brentford.
We'll Everton rep players tonight. The Brentford chat.
That's why you blame
me. I'm not. I said pick.
He's blaming.
Oh, this is a bigger than Everton.
5:30 Saturday. A bigger game.
Absolutely.
Yeah. These go in the kick-off times and everything.
No, I'm saying, will he rest players a little bit tonight, say someone's injured or whatever,
I don't know about rest.
I actually thought he might, that's like a no, but as an Everton manager, Liverpool going for the league, you've got to try and stop them. You can't. I don't think they've got the players to change the team, if I'm being totally honest.
What's the score?
I'm thinking 1-1.
Would you?
What?
Everton-Brentford. Have you seen Everton?
You love Brentford and Bournemouth, don't
you? You think Brentford will...
Yeah.
Okay, Everton-Brentford.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
You were shocked that I said Everton. Brentford was a draw.
Yeah, I was, yeah. Because I feel
what that... What do you think of
2-2.
I think Brentford will beat them.
2-1.
He loves it. You love an odd little one, don't he?
Like, yeah, just think it's one of them games. If they draw them in half an hour...
When you pick the first two, let me go with this.
Go on, then. Go on.
Mm. 2-1 Brentford, because we have to get back.
Yeah.
Yes, it's true. We need to start. Yeah, yeah.
We need to take risk.
Let's all go here. Villa, Chelsea. Jesus, strange
one.
No, Villa all day.
Villa, man. Villa beating Chelsea.
Saturday,
I don't know if Cole Palmer's, especially if he's not there, because what I saw the other day.
3-1 Villa?
Yeah.
3-1 Villa, yeah.
We've got lots of goals.
Sorry?
Nothing. We've got like really high scores, yeah, like 3-3.
Yeah, because like I think Villa would beat them.
3-1, come on. 3-1.
Giving them a goal.
Yeah.
Ollie Watkins.
You're giving Chelsea a goal?
Yeah, why not?
Who's going to score it?
Is Cole Palmer
back? Is this Sunday?
Very good.
That's Saturday.
8 o'clock.
If Cole Palmer's playing,
then the next
like
two are Sunday.
What time the game? Oh, Sunday, Saturday.
So Villa haven't got a midweek game. Who
is it? Villa, Chelsea.
Villa haven't had a midweek
game. Oh, this
game.
Is the big one. The
Chelsea
two bottom ones.
Mm. Oh, Villa win that.
Need to get this right.
Villa 2-0.
Yeah.
2-0.
Really?
2-0. Yeah.
See, we've kind of gone 2-0. All they've done is look at 3-1 and gone 2-0.
I think it's a brilliant game this Sunday.
I think this is a draw.
I think it's a brilliant game.
I think Arsenal win.
Sunday 2 o'clock.
Do you think they win it?
Tottenham haven't played for a long time. Tottenham have played for 2 weeks or 10 days
something
like that,
yeah.
You get so excited.
I don't know if it's a good thing. I'd go 2-1 Arsenal.
Okay.
I think Spurs will get a result.
Are you just saying that?
I initially thought Spurs might get a point.
Have you seen how they've been playing?
I think a draw.
That width they're giving up.
I think 1-1 or 2-1 Spurs. I don't see Arsenal winning.
Go on, Jin.
Wow.
You put your score in.
No, I was thinking it was...
Rice is playing that game.
I think it could be a mad game.
We all play
Spurs could turn up and...
Go for Spurs. If Arsenal win, he's delighted anyway. If Spurs winning, he gets something out of it, don't you? He gets something.
I'm going to phone Roy at like 3 in the morning and stuff. 2-1
Spurs. 2-1 Spurs.
You're going 2-1 Spurs?
Yeah, sorry.
It's only because you're a Spurs supporter. It's just like...
Okay.
Forest City.
Oh,
God.
Depends who's on for you.
4:30 Sunday.
I don't think Stuart Atwell will be reffing, will he?
Is it an Arsenal fan?
Who's first, you guys or us?
No, us.
Well, obviously City.
City
will set out a statement.
2-3-1.
We've done. Look how many teams and three ones we've done.
You've got a lovely outfit on. Keeps...
When it goes big, you go small, and when it needs to be big, that's
how. No. What do you think?
It needs to be bigger. Be
Have you been talking to my wife?
It does need to be bigger.
I've told that a few times.
Yeah.
Super sex.
Too much banter.
How much?
Love to get new people.
Three ones. Look how many free ones we've got. And 3-2.
I know. He loves a 3-1.
I think that's 4-0.
I think it's 4-0 as well.
Did you realise
it? Changes to 4-0.
Hang on.
It's kind of got a vibe. You got the vibe?
What is it?
4-0.
Are you going 4-0?
Yeah, 4-0.
No!
Yeah, he said 4-0 and I said 4-0. Are you going 4-0?
I'm going
4-0, do you?
Yeah, let's do it. 4-0.
I'd say
4-0.
I think it'd be
10. We need to get points back.
I know, but it's not 4. It's not going to be 4-0.
Okay, wait a minute.
Result. That's the way to get the points.
Let's go 3-1, please.
3-1. Come on, please. Can you see Forest scoring against City?
If you're wrong...
Can you see Forest scoring against City?
Every team can score a goal.
If he's right, can you imagine that?
Just remember that.
3-1, right?
You want him to...
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
It.
Two right.
Oh, this
is
all
pre-medical.
We'll go 2-1.
We have to take a gamble.
X for a sky.
Thanks, Ben. Thank you, Ben.
Well done, Ben.
If he gets it right, it looks good for the programme.
We talked about the United manager. Now we're on to the next Liverpool manager.
Is Klopp leaving?
What? you've already given us two Liverpool managers for next season that aren't going to be the Liverpool managers for next season. So who's your third one?
Well, the third favourite, Arnie Slot. Yeah, it looks like yesterday. So, when it came out yesterday, it was a little bit.
It's not exciting, is it?
No. It was obviously a shock to you because you've told it was Alonso and Amorim.
they're the ones that people wanted.
Yeah, but you can't expect a real shock of a manager. You're talking about Klopp leaving. It's tough.
Can I ask you a question?
You know what I mean?
We always say about Liverpool being so efficient, but it's quite clear that one or two of their sort of main targets that they thought they might get are just sort of like gone away a little bit. Are they moving down the sort of list here a little bit? I'm asking a question.
Yeah, because I would imagine Alonso was right at the top of that list for what he's done at Leverkusen, but also the connection. And that's a big thing, and that's what I want to get to. And it's a little bit worrying for me, a little bit as a Liverpool fan. I think Liverpool, when we've done well, forget 70s and 80s, but think of the Premier League era and think of, you know, Houllier had a good spell of 2 or 3 years where we won trophies. Rafa was the same, and Klopp's had that, where there's that real connection with the fans, and then Anfield gets going, and then you feel like you're moving somewhere. Mm. So, and I've always said this, I think Liverpool is different to almost any club in that the manager's always the god. He's like, it's not about it is about great players, but if you ask the fans now, it's Klopp. When we won the Champions League, it was Rafa. Mm. You know, it was Shankly. The manager is so important. And what's really interesting here is Michael Edwards, the sporting director, he was there at the start with Klopp. And they've obviously fell out for whatever reason. And a lot of his team have moved on. As soon as Klopp's gone,
they come back.
It's like the band are back together. So it's obvious something's it's happened behind the scenes. But the owners, FSG, were almost felt it was more important to get that back, that structure back, than who the next manager was. So it was like, we need all this back. Yeah. There's no way Michael Edwards is coming back and not having all the power to run this club. He's not even in the same role. He's in a bigger role, because I think they're going to try and buy other clubs. So my worry going forward is that the manager, whoever they bring in, will almost be...
just a coach.
A coach. Will he have a big personality? Will he have a profile? Will it be a case of, no, we're running the shop, you're just coming in to coach? And that's fine, because I get the way the game has moved on, and it's and I want Liverpool to get back to being about data and analytics, and you know, every player they bring in has got to maybe pass a certain criteria. I want to get back to that. But I don't want to get to a stage where you bring in a manager, and I think Slot might fall into this sort of category at the moment, where the fella who goes the game home and away, who's not into his stats or his data, he just wants to see this fella, and he thinks, he's going to win us the league, he's going to take us for, I'm on a journey with this guy. Can this guy stand next to Pep Guardiola on the touchline? And you feel like, yeah, we can go head-to-head with this guy. And I just think, whether it's the timing of, there's not those big managers out there, that whoever you were going to bring in was not going to be a Klopp figure. But it's just interesting to sort of...
You don't know about the connection, Jamie. When Rafa came in, obviously Klopp had obviously a good reputation, and Rafa had won stuff, but even Julio, good. But did they have when they came in, was there excitement at the start? Like, you have good memories of them because they won stuff. But when they first came in, was there still that bit of, you know?
Well, I think it's interesting that, Roy, because I think Klopp was almost, I said this at the start, Klopp wasn't just a signing for Liverpool, he was a signing for the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone knew who Klopp was. I think when Julio came in, it was the first foreign manager, so it was a bit of mystique. He'd been, and the way it was built up was that he'd actually, would you believe, he'd worked in Liverpool. You know what it's like, the local press have built up, oh, he's a Liverpool fan and all this stuff, but he'd been involved with France winning the World Cup. So you think, wow, France once won the World Cup. Rafa came in on the back of two La Liga titles in 3 years. And Valencia, if you'd have asked that Julio team that I played in, who was the best team you played against? We'd have all said Valencia. You know, that would have been... What are you laughing at?
I thought he was dying to get near girl.
I know, I was going to say, I'm shaking. So, I think there was something to get behind. Now, I would say if you bring in sort of the Feyenoord manager, it almost feels like a little bit... And listen...
Where's it come from, this?
When you go down the list, who's actually out there?
Was he on the list at the beginning? Was he?
Well, he obviously was.
I don't remember him being on the initial odds, like, you know, like 4, 5, 6 weeks ago. I don't remember seeing Arne Slot.
Well, obviously, I think Alonso, you don't get that. Everyone, I think, had bought into Amorim coming in, and I think what he's done at Sport
Lisbon. What's happened with Amorim? What's happened with that one? Because is he going to? I mean, he's on
well,
the
he's a
London.
Young man. He's only 39. He's done a brilliant job at Sporting. To win the league there twice in 4 years against Porto and Benfica, I'd gone all in on him really, and thinking, okay, I can get my head around it. The one thing about him was they were going to play a completely different system to what Liverpool do now. So that means there's a bigger overhaul of the squad. That's the case. I think the guy at Feyenoord has done a really good job there. It's a similar sort of way, Klopp's way as well. But it does feel a little bit like...
It's kind of a bit flat, hasn't it? Is it the whole...
Yeah, it's not like you're not
exciting,
bringing
is it?
Bring a Champions League sort of manager in. And the reason I wanted to mention this is, so Liverpool are always going to be data-driven. The one manager who's out there who's like a proper, where you go, oof, and is available is Tuchel. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think Liverpool would go for those type of managers now with the setup they've got behind the scenes.
Mourinho. I don't think Mourinho.
But if Thomas, even you sound a little bit unsure. It's almost like you're
deflated.
It's like you're swiping right and they're swiping left. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like,
no, but there's no. You said the other week, and you're right. It's like, if you got rid of Ten Hag, who'd you bring in?
I didn't expect this from Liverpool. I expected them to be quite precise, because they've told 6 months out, Klopp's told them, so they can get the next appointment right.
Exactly.
So the idea of Klopp going early was so that they could plan for the end of the season and get everything. So I'm thinking they've already know who they've got.
But is it a surprise that these guys, if they've been offered the job, they've turned it down?
But Roy, I thought with Liverpool, just because of how efficient they've been, I thought they would have already had it boxed off at the point where Klopp hands his notice in, because obviously they've already got someone locked in, and you're thinking, oh, Alonso's tied in. That goes, and then obviously the next guy goes, you're thinking...
But that's a good point, though, you know, because like they've tried to go for their... Obviously, their biggest targets, and for whatever reason, they've not
I thought they would have had it boxed off, right? I imagine Liverpool having it boxed off.
Yeah, but maybe they thought they could have got who they were going for. Yeah.
Do you think of when, like, Alex Ferguson went and then someone comes in? Do you think Alonso's like, that's a big job to take?
That's got to feed into it, because Klopp, like Jamie said, he's come in and he was a signing for the Premier League and he's done it. I would, if I was involved in the manager business and, you know, Liverpool came along, as big as it is, do I want to go in after Klopp? You want to go in with somebody
I thought if he... Because if he announced... If he says, I'm going to take the Liverpool job, let's say in February, March, which he would have had to have done, and it would never have kept quiet, it could have derailed what's happening at Leverkusen, which, to be fair, is the biggest thing that he could ever happen in his career at this stage, is winning the league. He could not distract, I don't think, from winning the league away from the... So I think he had to commit, not just maybe because he wanted to stay another year, because I think if it was going that he was leaving partway through a season when they hadn't won the league yet, and although there were a few points clear, he had to get that job done and make sure that he focused on that.
I just think with him, it would have been great for Liverpool, but I don't think it would have been... I think the best thing for Alonso is probably to stay another year at Leverkusen, because this is actually his first full season as a manager. So in terms of building that up, and I think he'll have that opportunity for jobs in the future.
It's a lot of confidence for a manager to say no, as if, because usually, like a player, you get a chance, or a manager, you go, take it, you might get it. Some of these top coaches go, no, I'll be there. It'll be there in a year or two for me.
I just think of... It feels like an appointment you'd make when Liverpool were almost maybe trying to get back in the top four. Not right now, Liverpool are probably in the best top five or six teams probably in Europe, and they have been for a few years. So it does feel a little bit... And that's why I go back to Tuchel. And I just think he's beat Pep. That's what I just think of, you know, you just a guy standing on the sideline and you're a Liverpool supporter and you're looking at him thinking he can go up against
him. He could win the Champions League as well.
Well, if he gets to the final, he'll have been in three of the last six Champions League finals. Now, I know it hasn't gone perfectly at Bayern Munich for him, but the job he did at Chelsea and trying to take on sort of Klopp as Liverpool and Pep's Man City. He's got something about him.
I get it.
That's my thing, and my hope with the people who've come in at Liverpool, they've been there before, they know the club really well, is don't ever forget how big the connection's got to be with a Liverpool support. And you might say that's the same with every fan, but that thing of like, he's our man. He can go up. He can fight against Pep. He can fight against whoever the Man United manager is. And we haven't just got a coach there who basically is a yes man behind the scenes.
Surely, Jamie, they must have... If they're going for him, then they probably have done a lot of work on him. It's like when they... I know Klopp came from, like, the Dortmund, and we knew Klopp's, like, body of work and that. And this guy, he must tick some boxes in
respect... the way he plays,
but
he's been successful.
Personality is huge, isn't it, for a club? For people to identify with someone on the sideline, whatever, the coaching credentials are brilliant. But somebody where you go, I like what I see with him. He's a good fit. Yeah. He's a good fit for the club.
FA Cup replays going? Yes or no?
Yes.
There's no surprises.
Yes.
I think...
I think yes as well. Not how they got there, but I think yes.
I just think them teams that get the replays, and do you know what I mean? Like them big games that they take to their stadiums.
I think this is dead simple.
Why yes, though?
To add
drama to the competition, do you know what I think, though, righty? What I think that would have been acceptable if they negotiated with
the NFL. I might get a chance to say.
No, go on, Jamie, you're right.
I've been speaking for 30 minutes about Liverpool and not got to a conclusion about who the next manager's going to be. Could you seed the top championship clubs and the Premier League clubs in round three so that they actually play against a League One and League Two or National League clubs? Could you actually make... So like a seed in Champions League, I was thinking if you wanted to take replays away, almost... So that actually you've got Man United have to go to a League Two or League One club, or that they have to go to a National League club. So there's a different...
You don't want to do that. They're missing out on the money then.
Or the other way is, they go to their ground.
They should have the choice. Yeah. You do the draw.
This thing that the lower league teams want replays, they don't want replays. They want replays against teams from the Premier League. If you're a lower league team in League Two,
or
you don't have a replay.
Want a championship, a non-league
you don't, you don't play a replay.
Get ready to do the draw and fix it.
And you still lounge like you did in that.
Just call any team out. All right, your number.
It's a little bit like this.
Just think.
You're out of order, both of you.
I just think that even the teams at the bottom, let's not forget, they play 46 league games. They're in the EFL Cup, they're in the Carabao Cup, and they're in the FA Cup. They've got no space for games either. Yeah. So they don't want replays. They just want the money if you play a Premier League.
They should have seeded.
Oh, my God.
He's nearly finished. It was supposed to be quick.
Honest to God. It's dead simple.
No, go on.
In the third round or the fourth round, when there's supposed to be replays, if you get drawn against a big team at your ground and you want to do a little... The FA allowed them, you can swap it if you want. Yeah. That's it, simple.
You could do that Liverpool years ago, or Man United,
you could do it a few years ago, then they stopped it. If you want to play at the Premier League ground, you do it. You speak to the club, the FA, we'd rather play this game. We're Salford, we'd rather play at Anfield, or we'd rather play at Old Trafford. Simple, there's no replay, done. Happy.
So the seeding side of things is what I was going with it. I think the seeding side of things and what Jamie's talking about, some iteration of that was where I would go rather than replay.
It's just a shame that the FA Cup...
But why tweak it so much? The FA Cup is amazing, so why get too clever with it? You know, I understand the replays and demands.
Can I just say, with the FA Cup and what they're doing with it, you know, simply because it's all about fitting in what the Champions League games and all the games what you've got to fit in, and you're saying that even the non-league clubs, they don't want to play as well. But the fact is, talking about a tradition of a tournament. I hold it in the same esteem as like Wimbledon and the Masters.
But hasn't it got to move with the times?
It's got to move with the times, but at the same time, the tradition of it shouldn't move, because like as long as you can find a way of making sure that those teams benefit from it. Because even watching, when's the last time you see any kind of Premier League game with Coventry against Man United with that kind of like energy?
But would you have wanted that to go to a replay at the end of the game?
Well, that game? No, but it's at the semi-final.
It used to, didn't it?
Right,
at the semi-final stage.
They've moved the final.
You played an FA Cup final replay.
They need three.
No, as part of these changes, they've actually moved the final inside the last league game again, which I think is a negative change. They've moved the final inside the last league.
They mess around with it so much.
But do you know something? The thing for me is you can't not consult with the majority of clubs who play in the competition to get to the decision they've got to. Right. They have to consult. Yeah, so that was the big problem for me.
Fixture congestion. How many replays do you actually play?
That's what
they
get to.
Let's call it the Gary Neville slow fire.
Honestly, this is worse than the quick fire with Anthony Gordon.
I think it's a really good question. I like this community question. Well done, whoever put it forward. With Jude Bellingham scoring the winner for Real Madrid against Barcelona, who is the greatest English player ever to play abroad? Oh, that's a good question to finish.
Wow.
English.
Hey, I thought it was a good question.
Greatest player to ever play abroad.
For what they achieved there, yeah. McManaman won two European Cups.
Yeah, man. Stevie at Real Madrid. I thought Platy done all right.
Yeah.
Gary Lineker.
Gascoigne.
No.
Beckham.
Beckham.
5 years at Real Madrid.
Beckham always looked...
He won the league in the last season, and that was Stevie Mac, Reyes.
He played at Milan, he played at PSG, and he played in Los Angeles.
We love David, but he didn't do well.
We got to throw Inci in for Inter Milan, because Inci was brilliant at Milan.
Inci? Beck's had the best career probably of an
international. No, but he didn't.
Brady, I know he's Irish.
He was amazing at those clubs. He's a great player.
Liam Brady, Andy Sampdoria, Irish.
Liam Brady, John Charles.
Well, can I just
Juventus, yeah.
He's not really there.
All right, King Kevin Keegan.
Keegan won the European Football of the Year 2 years
ago. Harry Kane scoring all them goals in Germany. No one's ever done that.
Wow.
One season.
Yeah, I'd say Kevin Keegan.
You like what I've gone with KK?
Well, he won the Ballon d'Or 2 years running in Hamburg. Jesus. That's unbelievable.
With a perm.
You get bonus points for
that. I'm happy to go with Kevin Keegan, to be fair.
I think Kevin Keegan.
If he's won the Ballon d'Or at Hamburg,
I think there's a couple of them.
He lost the European Cup final to Forest, I think.
We need a list of players.
Who went to Italy? Who didn't leave?
Trevor Francis went to Italy. Soonest went to Italy. Mark Haley.
Jimmy Greaves.
Oh, Dennis Law.
He wasn't there long.
Yeah, but Dennis...
Law went to... Where was
Turin?
Torino,
yeah.
AC Milan, Jimmy Greaves.
It's a quiz question, isn't
it? Luther Blissett went to AC Milan.
Yeah. Who is the greatest English player to ever play abroad? What a good question.
I feel like we're missing someone. Kevin Keegan. I feel like
it's a good question because we're still debating this.
Yeah.
You got anyone else?
I feel like we're missing someone.
Yeah.
I just can't think. We'll get back to you on next week's episode.
Aldo, I know he's
next
Irish.
Next week's episode.
What Bellingham's achieved at Dortmund, the new camp. What he's done at Dortmund and now at Real Madrid, Bellingham's going to take some
beer. I wonder if Bellingham will end up being...
Sancho?
Not even playing in the Premier League.
Sancho?
Sancho
win the Champions League this year?
You watched that game, by the way, last week, Real Madrid, Man City, and I knew everyone knows Bellingham's a good player. I didn't realise how good he was at all. Oh my God!
Do you think he played well that night?
I thought he'd done some lovely stuff. Some of his touches were unbelievable.
Touches.
I thought they were. Honestly,
he'd done some beautiful.
It's impressive.
Oh jeez.
You're easily pleased.
Honestly,
he got six touches.
No,
and they were nice touches, but with six, I'm telling you, I was watching him. I thought he had a tough night. But listen,
no, I thought he really was. Some of his touches.
Whole City didn't win that game.
I know. You know what? I was on a flight and I landed.
You're always on a flight? Jesus Christ! Are you a pilot?
I'm on a flight.
Fucking hell.
Right, that's it.
Jesus Christ.
We're all finished.
Putting you on a flight.
New York.
Putting Rory on a flight.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.